This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, brought to you by Full Sneak Gear. Check out their entire lineup at fullsneakgear.com. Also, be sure to check out our entire stable of podcasts at sportsmansempire.com. This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Where's your playlist taking you? Down the highway? To the mountains? Or just into daydream mode while you're stuck in traffic? With over 4,000 hotels worldwide, Best Western is there to help you make the most of your getaway. Wherever that is. Because the only thing better than a great playlist is a great trip. Life's the trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
Welcome to the Antler Up podcast, brought to you by Tethered, the world's best saddle hunting gear, and we got a great show for you all today. You're listening to the Antler Up podcast, where we dive into archery, hunting, and the mindset needed to elevate your game. Join us as we explore the latest strategies and gear to help you become the best hunter you can be, both in and out of the woods. And turkey season is here, and if you're serious about running and gunning for gobblers, you need a vest that's as mobile and adaptable as you are. That's where the Tethered M2 Turkey Vest comes in. Designed with the input from the hunting public and built for high-speed, low-drag performance, the M2 is ultra-light, whisper-quiet, and completely modular. Whether you like to keep it minimalist or pack in every tool of the trade, the M2's MOLLE-compatible system lets you set up your gear exactly how you want it. It's made from Whisper Tough fabric, a blend that's soft and silent on the outside, but tough as nails on the inside, all wrapped in the legendary Mossy Oak Bottomland camo. And best of all, the M2 is proudly made here in the USA, built for durability, designed for the ultimate mobility, and ready for the toughest turkey woods. So head on over and grab yours today over at tethered.com. America's Best Bowstrings is dedicated to crafting the finest custom bowstrings using top-notch BCY fibers and their exclusive building process. Check out the Launch Series, which is designed for the most demanding bow hunter and archer, setting a new standard in durability and performance. Custom 452 XE fiber provides unparalleled strength and resilience, making them the go-to choice for serious archer. 2-year warranty, they stand behind their products, and the Launch Series bowstrings come with this warranty against peep rotation, serving separation, and stretch, giving you a peace of mind in every shot. So head on over to America's Best Bowstrings and build your custom set today. Use code AUO and save some money on your order today. At Antler Up, we know that quality gear can make or break your hunt, and that's why we're excited to partner with Huntworth Gear. If you're looking for premium gear without the premium price tag, Huntworth has you covered. And new for 2024, the Vertec pattern is a dynamic woodland camo pattern blending perfectly into any environment, whether you're stalking in the early season or hunkering down in the late season. From lightweight options for those warm September days to insulated gear that will keep you warm during the harshest winter conditions, Huntworth has you covered for everything you need all year long. Gear up right now and head over to huntworthgear.com to check out their full lineup. Welcome back to the show, everyone. I'm joined by fellow Pennsylvania podcasters, hunters. I got Ken and Megan from the Broken Knock Productions and Podcasts. Guys, welcome back to the show, or welcome to the show, I should say.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
Absolutely. It's awesome to finally get a chance to talk, really. Ken, you and I kind of briefly chatted on the phone the other night just to get things squared up as far as like our setups go, of making sure we could hear each other good and microphone stuff wise. But it's been just from afar, we follow each other, we message each other on Instagram, and we exchange phone numbers as well to keep in touch on certain things. And I'm excited to have this conversation just because fellow Pennsylvania people and in the same world and trying to do the whole podcasting thing and put yourself out there, which is really neat, and it's exciting and fun. So I appreciate you guys taking the time this evening to do it.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah. I enjoyed your text. Was that Sunday or Monday? You're like, yeah, hey, let's jump on. You want to do a pod? I was like, heck yeah.
Yeah. Heck yeah, so. Man. It's fun to, it's funny because for doing this 5 years, you go in ebbs and flows, and you go in, you get like the, man, like, is it really worth it? Then you get the, but I so enjoy these conversations, getting the chance to meet people, because it is a hobby. I mean, I have my full-time job. It's not like it's my end all be all, and nor could it be. The people that do it full-time, I got a lot of respect for them, but I, having a family, two girls and my wife, that's I don't know if that's really doable in my world. So it's just, you go through that, and like, I had a moment a couple of months ago where it's like, I don't know, is five going to make it? And I hit it, and I finally feel like I got another hair up my ass and come up with some really good ideas. And I'm excited to continue to record, and hopefully I could piece visually what I visualize in my head of where the podcast and where I plan to go with certain conversations. I just hope that it translates, because I think it could be pretty cool as far as, it's a little bit different than what I've done in the past too, a little bit of the same, but a little bit different. So I, it's crazy. So that's why, like I said, I just, anybody that's in the game and doing it, I have a lot of respect for you. So I'm excited to talk about it. And like I said, with you guys being from PA, it's even more cool to me.
Yeah. Likewise. I mean, starting up last year, you get a couple episodes in, you think, just start up a podcast, it'll be easy,
yeah,
you know.
Fun.
And then you sit down, you start editing and cutting everything. And then I didn't really know when we first started all the kind of the tricks and the AI stuff until maybe like 3 or 4 episodes in.
Yeah, we had zero experience. We just bought all of the stuff because we thought it would be cool to do. And then we're like, oh, we're doing this. And then we get home. We both work full time. We get home, and there's nights that he's like, do you want to sit down and edit some pictures? And I'm like, not really, but I guess I will. But then these kinds of you meet really cool people and you have awesome conversation. You're like, okay, yeah, this is why we do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Honestly, it's funny because it is about the people. I mean, in the grand scheme of things, like if you when you enjoy it that much, as far as that goes, like that's where, like you said, like having this conversation, getting a chance to meet you guys, hopefully I could come out and do that 3D shoot that you're doing. Yeah. And I want you to, well, make sure we remind me to bring that up. We could talk about that as well. But, before we do dive around all this talk, I do want you to introduce yourselves, individually. I mean, Megan, if you want to go first and see what you have, and just, I guess, talk about you as an individual and how you got here. And then when you're done, Ken, you could kick it off for yourself.
Yeah. So I grew up with a dad that hunted since I was little. I was never interested in it growing up. Both my sisters hunted. I preferred to play sports, so I didn't care about it. And then I moved away after graduating high school. I lived in South Carolina and California, and they're not big hunting states. So again, not really something that I was around. My dad bought a local archery shop almost 10 years ago. So when he finally convinced me to move back to Pennsylvania and be around the family, I decided on the weekends I would just help out there. I was just working the front desk. I really didn't care to learn anything. It was just an easy paycheck. I got paid to sit there and gossip with my mom every Saturday. But still zero interest in hunting or shooting bows or any of that. I work in the veterinary field, and that's kind of where my focus is, and it was just an extra thing. And then this guy walked in one day, and we started talking about dogs, and then started dating, and then he kind of kept saying, you know, you should get a bow, you should shoot. And I'm like, yeah, sure, whatever. And then finally convinced me to, and last March, I bought my first Elite, and I have not been able to put it down. I've been hooked ever since, and now I'm the one that's bugging him to go out and hunt. Like last season, I was kind of upset we didn't turkey hunt as much as I thought we could have. So I was the one that was upset about it. I even said we had a vacation planned, and I said, you know, next year we really need to plan our May a little bit better for turkey season. I'm off on Friday, so I'm the one that's going out in the woods behind the house to hunt by myself. And he's like, no, wait for me. So I've just been hooked ever since. So going from having no interest whatsoever to now, you know, I even want to learn how to work on bows at the shop and stuff like that. So it's just been a total 180. And I've just taken the industry and everything just in as much as I could. And I love it.
Mm-hmm. That's really cool. So let me ask you this, just because I actually made a post about this last night. And I bring it up a lot as far as on the podcast if with friends and heck, even anybody that will give me an ear and I tell them about how much I love archery, I guess you could say, you know, like when you finally started getting into it and shooting, and like you said, you love it now, what kind of impact has that like changed for you as far as just having that, you know, new, I guess you could say discipline, you know what I mean? So what, you know, if you could remember, what was it like without archery to what it is like now? How much has that like it made an impact on you?
It's been huge. I even like when I lived in South Carolina, I did a lot of intramural sports. So I'm always somebody that likes to have like an outside activity outside of work to do. And I'm not old, but I'm getting older, and I still can't do those things as much now. But we tried picking up golf, I got incredibly frustrated really fast. I didn't like that I wasn't good at it.
Her level of frustration is like a guy's level of frustration when we started doing golf a little bit. Like, I was the calm, collected one. I was like, next hole. She's the one that would slam her club on the green. And it was like, that's supposed to be me, not you.
So I needed a hobby that I would actually enjoy. Thankfully shooting my bow has come pretty naturally to me, so that's nice. I'm not frustrated with it, but even when I'm good at listening to him and kind of taking his cues on it. So from that standpoint, I enjoy having a hobby that it's something I want to do. I want to go pick up my bow and shoot it. And then from the hunting side, it's been incredible, just the stress relief. I love that if I'm having a bad I manage veterinary hospitals now, which just comes with a whole different volume of things to do outside of working in the veterinary field. And I definitely have my days where I'm just like, I've had a week, I can't do this. And just being able to go down just the little property we have behind the house and sit down in there for 4 hours and just watch the squirrels run around and make me think there's a deer coming, and just watching nature, even if I don't shoot anything, nothing happens. I just walk back up to the house 4 or 5 hours later and I just feel refreshed and renewed. So just that is more than any anxiety medication or a therapist could ever do for me.
That's awesome. Now that's great. I mean, obviously, like you said, Megan, your dad has been hunting pretty much your whole life. Who was the first one to take you out on that first hunt? Was it your dad or was it Ken?
Both, actually. We went, the three of us went turkey hunting together, smushed into this tiny little blind.
It was a three-person blind, we fit. Your dad found room and took a little nap, so.
I was expecting something much larger, and then I'm like, you guys are like on top of me right now. How am I supposed to do this? My dad fell asleep during it, so he, but No, we didn't get any turkeys, but they both were there for my very first hunt experience.
No, that's awesome. I just because like I have like with my daughter, and you know, it's funny like how you say when you go through that like the everyday life, right? You go through the work, hustle and bustle, and it's funny because I kind of had that aha moment about I want to say 7-8 years ago when I was here by myself. I did not have my dad with me as far as like that hunt goes, and it was like kind of my first by myself hunt in a very long time, and I just remember being like, man, I took everything in. And what you just said, the squirrels, the just the smells and the wind and the all my senses were like, I felt like on 100. Mm-hmm. And I'm just sitting there appreciating everything. And the for how quickly I appreciated it, my initial then next thought was like, wow, hindsight is 20/20. Like I remember being a young kid, a young teenager. And although I loved hunting, I just was like, when am I going to go and hang out with my friends and do that next, the next thing, right? Like mm-hmm. just, when am I going to go talk to my girlfriend, or when am I going to go do this with this friend and listen to this music? And it just, and when's the next deer going to come so I can finally shoot this sucker again or whatever it was. It just kind of, I was always, I wanted that gratitude then, or that, you know, that there then piece of success basically so quick. And I was just like, man, I was missing it. You know what I mean? And even mm-hmm. again, I enjoyed it and I loved having that time, but there's also other parts of it where I had a different relationship with my dad then. And it was like, oh man, this is all he sees me for. And we weren't even in the same tree stand, right? Like I was old enough where he was like, all right, see you later. I'll pick you up at dark and see you back at the truck type of ordeal. So it wasn't even fun for me in that side of things at times. So it's like, but then as an adult and that when that hit me, I just remember being like, man, that's what I needed as that troubled little dick high school kid I was. You know what I mean? Like that's exactly what I needed. And it's neat though, as you could have that at any point in time, like you just said, Megan. It's like, even though you never did it your whole life, you do it now. And it's like, you could find that serenity and be fine with it.
Yeah. And it's even cool. Like you mentioned, like having something to do with your dad growing up. My dad coached me in sports, but we didn't get along while he was the coach and I was the player. And the only thing we ever really had in common was football. And that's probably now I'm like a nut about college and NFL. And that's all I think about during the fall, which I'm trying to balance that with hunting now. We didn't have a whole lot in common while I was growing up. But it's nice now as an adult. And then I moved away for 10 years. So then I was away from him. So now as an adult and I'm back home and we have this shared interest and we go and do these things and even just doing the podcast together, it's been really good for our relationship too. We're way closer now than we ever were while I was growing up.
Mm-hmm. We pulled a little joke on her dad, this being like her first like 3D season. When she was shooting, sighting in and everything. And she was like, I want to go back further. I was like, okay, we'll go to 30 yards. You know, she's landing them in there. I'm like, huh. And then we go back to 40. This is in the driveway at the shop, down at the bow shop. And she's dropping them in there. I'm like, huh. And I looked at her. I said, we're not going to tell your dad about this when we go to the 3D shoot on Sunday. When we go to a 3D shoot and we get to the peg, it was like a 40-yard shot. And he's like, Megan, you going to go up? She's like, no, I'm going to take a shot from here. He goes, oh, okay. And she just absolutely pinwheels. I think it was a sheep at like 40 yards. And the look on his face, he was just like beside himself. And then I broke away and told him like a couple weeks later, I like broke the news to him.
Because he kept saying, you know, you don't have to worry about shooting far. You can walk up to 20 yards if you want. And it kind of like, because I'm competitive, I'm like, oh, you don't think I can shoot far? Like, okay. So it was pretty funny. He was not prepared for that at all.
That's awesome. Well, like what a story, what an introductory into it. And it's great that not only do you have your dad, but you also have Ken. That's like, you know, that good support. So Ken, what about you, man? Like what's your little backstory and what led you here?
Oh man, I started young. My dad was always going up to Clearfield, Glen Ritchie area. He hunted rifle up there with my uncle, grandfather, a couple other family members. And I remember before I could even hunt, when he would leave, you know, saying goodbye. And then like the nights of the days that like he was hunting, I still remember this, like anticipating the phone call, like when he would get back from hunting for the day. You know, so that's where I really noticed, like thinking back on it, that's where my interest really peaked. You know, got to be 12, took the hunter safety course, started going out into the woods with him, So really, you know, like most outdoorsmen, kind of the bring up from their father. You know, we hunt as much together still as we can. And then we actually did our pronghorn hunt together. So it was an absolute blast. So yeah. And then I think picking up the art, I didn't pick up archery till like 16 or 17. My neighbor gave me an old bow, and I think it was a Martin Tiger or something like that. And I was like, oh, cool. You know, this is going to give me an opportunity to hunt more. Cause that was the one thing that I couldn't do, you know, just hunting with rifles was I'm limited to, you know, back then, like 2 weeks. So it gave me more of an opportunity. And then I just got hooked ever since then. You know, it was just, and I can't stop. I think about it every day, you know, even during the off season, like most of us do. I mean, cripe, now we're talking about it all year on the podcast and everything. And then, like you were talking, what's crazy is I've started to realize with bow hunting is I'm doing the same thing when I was 12 as I am right now. You just have so much more knowledge, and to have the same exact enjoyment still is insane.
With you, dude. It's so neat because you brought up a really cool memory for me. I remember being with my dad, and my parents were divorced. So on certain weekends I would go with him, and at a certain age is when I, you know, obviously decided whether I would go or not. And he was with my stepmom, and then they had I have my own brother and sister, like, because of them too. And we would go into a guy's local shop, and it was his taxidermy. First in the back room was his taxidermy, but then in the front, when you would walk in, was a little mini bow shop, and he would have the old Hoyts. And I remember seeing the logo with the apple, and I just remember being like, wow. And I, like when you were saying you had the extra 2 weeks, you know, you could hunt more longer just because you're used to hunting just 2 weeks. And I never really put two and two together about hunting in the fall. You know what I mean? Cause I, again, like with my parents being divorced, my dad would just obviously weekends he'd go hunt. So I didn't see him or whatever it would be. So I didn't really put those two and two together until later on, when I just remember being like, wow, I want one of those. Like, look how cool that is. And all that type of stuff. And then I was very young when he got me my first bow. It was one that it could grow with me. And it was, you know, I took that hunter safety course, like you said, as soon as I turned 12, and I had the bow at the time. And I was like, I think it was 13 when I shot my first deer with the bow. And I just remember that feeling of the first time I shot at the deer, I missed, and it like just bounded, you know, just because I was probably pulling back. Who knows what the poundage actually was.
Yeah.
And the deer just bounded and kept feeding below me. And I'm just behind my dad's house, basically in the woods behind his house. And I was like, oh my gosh, I could shoot again. And I still don't know how I knocked that arrow, because I remember doing it. And I took my time and I shot the deer, and my legs, dude, were just like, if it was a cartoon, they would have looked like noodles. And I saw the deer die, and it was still light out. I could see it die in front of me, and I'm screaming from the tree stand, like, to my dad, because he was like, oh, look out the window, see if I see you. And I'm like, dad, dad. And he came out, we recovered the deer, and I just won't ever forget that feeling. And that's ever since then, I was like, I always want to have that rush. And dude, that moment there, even when I see deer, like, I could be driving down the road with my wife, and there could be, you know, in a field 100 plus yards away, I'm like, hey, look at the deer in the field. Like, I get excited for that. You know what I mean? Like,
yep.
I don't care if they're fawns, does, whatever. I just get excited for that. And that's the, that's the stuff, man. Those old school memories that keep us alive. And like you said, something that you've been doing since you were 12 years old, since you were 16 with shooting the bow, and till now, man, we have some weird disease that in our brains about this stuff.
Yeah,
that's for sure.
Yeah. And we joke with my friends a lot, that I hunt with too. It's like the amount of work too that you put in for that, like 10 second, 20 second adrenaline rush too. We joke about that all the time. We look at each other and be like, all this for 10 seconds, 20 seconds.
Well, it's funny though, because for the longest time, it was like, what can we do in our power to not mess up in those 10 seconds, right? Like, we wait and we want those 10 seconds to be, not, I don't want to say as perfect, but we want to make sure we do that animal, you know, the best that we can to harvest and do all that shot and put a great shot placement on the deer or whatever animal. And it's like, how we want to make sure we are perfect in that moment, right? As yeah. close to being perfect. So it's like we chase that and we know we're never going to be perfect. So it's like, so we, it's just an ongoing cycle of practicing and all that type of stuff. And that's the thing, like that, Megan, going back to that very first question about the archery and like what you're learning and growing in this situation. It's like, it humbles me every single day. And it's funny that you use golf as that analogy, that you guys try that, because golf's the same way. Like you suck. And then you have that one good shot where you're like, I'm 5 feet from the pin. You're like, let's do this again tomorrow. You know, like it's the exact same thing. And yeah. It's funny just how that stuff is. And I'm not surprised, Megan, how you were saying you did sports and you were very active. And now you find this to be like another outlet. I mean, countless of people have that, and it's really neat that you're able to have those kind of mesh and find that passion. And like you were saying, Ken, just something that you've done ever since you're a young man. And you know, what made you think about doing the whole broken knock stuff?
So I think just multiple conversations with Chris and, you know, her dad and her, and just saying like, man, you know, it'd be cool to like, you know, kind of get into a little bit of photography, a little bit, do a little bit of filming.
We were at like a Lent fish fry or something at like a local fire hall sitting there eating. And my dad just brought up, he was like, you know, it'd be pretty cool to do like a podcast or something. And at first I like looked at him like, well, you're crazy. We're not going to like, what do we have to talk about? And then it just, we dove all in like immediately.
Yeah.
It went from like, yeah, okay, whatever. Just a conversation to like, we've bought everything. Now yeah. How do we do it?
Yeah. And we were fortunate. So her dad, Chris, used to have a show, Keystone Wild Outdoors. So that he did still have a little bit of equipment. So we were fortunate with that to kind of be able to reuse some of that equipment. We've upgraded, you know, over the year. And then with his experience in any kind of like filming and stuff like that and having advice from him. Plus he's been hunting his whole life too.
Over
and
30 years.
Yeah, so. he's well experienced. So having that knowledge was unique for the three of us, because you have someone with over 30 years experience, me with just over 20 years, and Megan, this past year was her first year. So we really felt that we could hit a lot of, you know, audience groups in the experience realm of things, along with the younger kids or the females that are looking to get into the sport, archery, even if it isn't hunting, you know, to see Megan, this is her first year. You know, she goes into the shop, she's comfortable, there's no need to be nervous. So I think that was just kind of the send off, like, yeah, let's do this. And then we just kind of hit the ground with it, you know?
Yeah. That's what's really neat about this day and age of all this stuff. It's just like, great, if it works, it doesn't matter how many people listen, as long as you're having fun doing it. And then, you know, the people will see the genuine side of it and see that and, you know, gravitate towards that and all that type of stuff. And, you know, and the beauty of it is like, it's not your everyday job. So if one day you decide that, hey, time to move on and try something different, you're okay to do that. And that's what I've kind of, once I got that balance of understanding that, that's when I've had more fun, and that's when the conversations and started to feel better. So that's exciting to see that you guys are doing that, and like you said, getting people into archery, growing that sport, whether they hunt or not. I love to hear that, guys. I really do. That's awesome.
Yeah, thank you.
What I'm trying to think with what's you guys did the Total Archery Challenge. That was like kind of like your main kickoff. What was that like for you guys? Because you guys had a booth and everything, didn't you?
We were there with, go ahead.
Yeah, so my dad, we know Rob Chalinski, that he is Total Archery Challenge, essentially. He's been a customer of my dad's for a long time. My dad originally set up a Creek Archery booth at TAC years ago, and then we have to shut down the entire, it's literally run by our family and like a couple friends. So we have to shut down the entire shop for that weekend and take off from work and everything. So my dad just at the time just didn't see the value in continuing to do that every single year. And then once we started this back up, Rob was like, you guys should really come back out. And my dad was like, oh, okay, fine. Like, we'll take the shop back up there. And he's like, we'll set up a little booth for the podcast. And we had a blast. And it was the first year I had ever seen TAC. He's shot it a couple years. My dad was obviously there as a vendor. And I was just like, I felt like I was in Disneyland. Like, to me, I was just like, oh my God, like, what? This is so cool. And we helped set up a couple of the courses like a week or two before. Mm-hmm. And that was really awesome to see like the thought process that goes behind all of, like, there's six courses in PA.
There's eight or nine.
Or maybe eight. And we set up two courses. It took us all day long to set two courses up. And we were rained on, exhausted, but we loved it. We're like, let us know next year. Like, we'll be back out. And it was cool. Like, people would come by the booth and be like talking to us. And we're like, oh, what course did you shoot? And they're like, we shot Hoyt. And we're like, oh, we set that one up. And they're like, F you. Like, that was really hard. Like, so it was fun to like be able to banter with people and meet so many people and just get to like really experience TAC. Yeah.
And the shop did phenomenal at that event too. I mean, it was to the point where my uncle has a lodge up there, so we were fortunate to have that to stay at. But her dad was going to maybe stay a couple days up there just because we're like 45 minutes from Seven Springs. But her dad ended up going back to the shop every night to get things that people needed. I mean, they were just coming through his tent like crazy. Thank goodness Lancaster Archery was set up there, because he just opened up, because he has an account, you know, as a dealer through Lancaster. So if he's got parts he doesn't need, he's running over Lancaster booth, throw this on the, you know, close the tab off at the end of the show and stuff. But he wasn't even really planning on selling bows, and he sold a good handful of bows there even.
We had so many people come up and are like, do you have anywhere you can get me a new string? And if we sold every single string that we brought with us, and my dad uses somebody, like, he places it on order, but he had a local guy that he knew that could build them, that was building them overnight for us every single night so he could go pick them up. So, I mean, it was just, it was really cool to see. And my dad's like a people pleaser. That's why he does so well with the business, is like when somebody come down and be like, can you get me another string? Like, we're looking at each other like, there's no way we can get this person another string. He's like, let me make a couple phone calls. I'll let you know in the morning if I can come up with one. And sure enough, he'd come up with one.
That's so awesome. Good for your dad, because that's a lot, man, for 10 years doing that. And it just seems like every other day I'm seeing something about some archery shops just having trouble and all that type of stuff. So to hear that, and like you said, you build that reputation, and you bring value to that, your community within the archery community that you guys are in, that your dad's at, and having that, because like you said, it's hard. I hear Nate just say, you know, I'm like, oh, Nate, you're going to go do this? And he's like, no, man, like, I can't shut the shot off, like, close the shop up for that weekend or whatever like that. Like, that's tough, right? As a consumer and someone, I'm like, oh, well, why not? Like, you could just do that. And it's like, you own it, but it's, you know, that's money, right? So when you think about it, that side of things, and I'm glad that not only did you guys have a great time and experience that and connect and, you know, network a little bit, but also your dad in the shop had a really good showing that weekend. Dude, it's crazy. I mean, this year I'm finally going back. I haven't gone the last 2 years. I was doing the Montage Mountain shoot that they had. It was more where I grew up, Northeast Pennsylvania.
Okay.
And, I mean, you could shoot, you know, it's still on a ski resort type place, so you're still trekking up and down and doing all kind of fun shots, like long shots, and you get that TAC experience, and without the TAC crowd, if that makes sense. Like, you, I mean,
and
you're
like
going from
village and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, there was a tiny vendor village, but again, like, it's great to see vendor village, and I'll do it. I'll go through it and talk to people and hopefully see some friends, and which is all great. And I love that, you know, but those moments, it's like, hey, let's just go shoot. And I don't have to wait 1 hour just to shoot one target. You know what I mean? Like, that's where it kind of got. And, we didn't get into 1 year because of just the knock times of just trying to schedule in and all that type of stuff. So we're like, all right, well, luckily we had this, and we did that just the last 2 years, but we got in on TAC again this year. But so I'm excited to do that. But like you said, it is a heck of an experience. It is different. There's nothing like it. You know, I think a lot of places try to create their own little thing like Total Archery Challenge. But it's funny though, like you said though, about your dad, Megan, because I remember my first year going, and just, there was a guy, I remember, I didn't shoot with him or anything like that. I just remember him nearby saying, I only have like 3 arrows left and I still got 2 more days to shoot. Like I got to go buy another like 2 dozen arrows and like blah, blah, blah. Like, cause he was there like all weekend and it's just amazing what, you know, how much you go in there thinking like, I got enough arrows. And then people that don't, you know, it's like, yeah, and like you're saying, like strings, like how many times are people blowing up their bows and buying new bows?
They'll come down and, you know, being at the shop long enough, and especially your dad and the guys that work for her dad will look at someone and be like, yeah, he probably dry fired that bow. And they're like a little bit embarrassed at first. And then we would ask them and we're like, look, we've all done it. Did you dry fire? Because there's more we want to look at if you dry fired it, you know. But yeah, there's a lot of guys that come down with that stuff.
So are you guys doing it this year?
Yeah,
the shop will be there again this year. We'll be set up. I think our setup's we're gonna have a little bit bigger of a space inside the tent this year. But we're super excited. We had a really good setup last year. We were right by registration, so everybody had to be funneled toward us and all the arrows were right there. So everybody's like, oh, I'm going to have to remember you're here this weekend. But yeah, we'll be back and we're super, super excited.
Yeah. Chris got his hands on a bunch of more, we'll call them like budget arrows. And he just had them in 5-gallon buckets, just all in front. And people were just walking by. And I think the one guy came by, he was like, well, heck, I'm shooting that one competition shoot on the range. I'm just going to buy a dozen of these. I think there were like a dozen arrows for like $60 or something.
I think it was 40. It was some ridiculously low price. And the kid, we're like, I'm asking him like, you know, what length do you want these cut to? Do you want it like based off the insert? Like all these, he was like, I'm going to go shoot these at a metal target. I don't care. I'm like, okay.
He's like, yeah, I'm just going to go blow them up and hopefully one finds its mark. Exactly. Yeah. Now that's awesome. Anything else that you guys are doing this upcoming year as far as like the archery shoot? I guess this would be a good time, Ken, to talk about what's coming up here in the next like 2 weeks, 3 weeks from when this airs.
Yeah. So Chico Outdoors, it's an outdoor, outdoor show, local outdoor show, Westmoreland County Fairgrounds. It was started by, Matt Christ and his family, kind of in memorandum of a brother that he lost. So this is their 7th year. He was a big avid outdoorsman, as is their family. So they decided to start this show, raise money. They're a nonprofit organization. A lot of the money goes back to Children's Hospital and any kind of the causes, you know, towards the kids to bring them up into the industry.
A lot of the local like archery teams and they do like fishing derbies and they really give, like they mostly are focused on the youth interested in the outdoors.
So that's April 12th and 13th at the Westmoreland County Fairgrounds. What we are holding, as well as, you know, Chris with the shop, we're going to have our own area there and we're going to do kind of the first annual barn burner 3D shoot. So we're going to have kind of a barn set up at the fairgrounds. We'll have 3D targets placed out. And then just your general, you know, 30 shots, depending on how many people come at once. It's kind of just a single shoot, shoot how you please, you know, the hunter class, you know, the competition kind of bow class. Just general stuff. We didn't want to get too deep into the weeds with the classes. You know, we want people to have fun. So we'll have people, the guys that work at the bow shop, do the scoring, things of that nature. But if anyone's interested in it, chicooutdoors.org. And then just there's an online registration to follow. We have it on our pages then also. But it's a big outdoor show and they've been growing great. And the one thing that they really pride themselves on is a lot of outdoor shows that you'll go to, you'll see, like, you'll walk down an aisle and it's guys selling gutters and garage doors and stuff like that. They're very
selective.
Yeah, they're selective on the vendors that are there to make sure that it's tailored to, you know, the outdoor people. Or there's, you know, like, there's people that come that make, there's ladies that make jewelry, you know, out of, you know, antlers and things along that nature.
They have a building that's definitely like you can go drop your wife off there. It's like all the dips and like clothes. And there's definitely like an area where it's like, go check that out. Like they have that area where there are like a little bit of a variety outside of the outdoors. But for the most part, it is something to do with the outdoors, which is really nice. So you're not coming and you're not having somebody ask you if you're interested in solar panels and you're like, why are you here?
Yeah, or T-Mobile or someone standing up there. But it's a great show. I mean, it's a great cause. Again, this is their seventh year, and we've been fortunate enough that they've asked us to help with the promo and a lot of the content for this year to get the videos together for them. Also kind of on the production side of what we're getting into. So it's a great show. Again, Chico Outdoors, Westmoreland County Fairgrounds, April 12th and 13th.
So that archery, is the archery shoot both days then to go along with that? Nice.
Yep.
That's awesome. Yep.
No like particular knock times. We've had some friends ask, hey, like, you know, is there a certain time we should come shoot? You know, we got to get a sitter or something like that. And we just, I responded back, hey, it doesn't matter. You know, come whenever it works for you. You know, we'll fit you in. We'll work you in with the shoot with however the lines run in currently whenever they arrive. You know, it's again, we want people to have fun.
Heck yeah. How did, so Megan, last year, that first hunt was turkey season then for you? Was that last year? How excited are you for this year for turkey?
I'm really excited this year. I'm already being like competitive about not, I don't know that competitive is the right word, but I'm like, we need a different farm. Not happy with the farm we were on last year. Like I started a new job and I'm trying to work out what my schedule is going to be. And I'm trying to make sure like I have Friday mornings off. So if I want to go hunt by myself, I'm going. Like I'm already trying to pick out like, oh, we've got this Saturday. We've already got something on it. Like it better not be in the morning. I'm already like all in, like nothing's stopping me this year.
That's awesome. What about this past year, Ken, for you? I know you had an awesome hunt in Ohio. What was your 2024 hunting season like this past year?
2024 hunting season, I want to say, I think I was more concentrated with you, and I loved every minute of it. Just showing her the ropes, trying not to be, you know, everything at once, which is hard because I've been doing it for 20 years, trying to keep a step back, and she'll call me out on it. She's like, I just started. I'm like, yep, sorry. But I think just concentrating with more here in PA with her. And then Ohio, we have Chris and I share a lease in Ohio with a group of guys. Was able to get out there. That's kind of my hunting. PA, was mostly with Megan. And then going out to Ohio, I mostly went out on Sundays because we would hunt Saturdays here. Unless she had something going on, then I would run out for the weekend in Ohio. So was fortunate enough in Ohio, actually in their straight wall season, to get a buck. It was actually kind of a unique day. Chris and I share trail cameras, and we've had a couple target bucks that were showing up. And then like 3 days before the weekend for straight wall season, I wish I had your dad's, I should put your dad's rack down here. But this very wide, and it was his left side was much wider than his right side. And he pops up on the camera and I was like, oh, this deer is new. Sent her dad a screenshot and he thought I photoshopped it. I was like, dude, I'm not that good. Like, this is legit. Like, he just came into this area. And I want to say, 3 days, it was probably like on a Wednesday. And he was patterning early, like 5 a.m., like he was showing up. And her dad and I were like, well, we better leave at like 2:30 because it's like an hour and a half from where we live. So we booked it out there, met at the local gas station at 4 o'clock, changed at the gas station because Chris wanted to be in the stand at 4:30 because then he had to get back. The fortunate thing was it was a more easily accessible stand for him because the shop opens on Saturdays at 1 o'clock. So I discovered this deer, but the nice guy that I am, I said, hunt this deer. I'll go on these other deer that we've been watching. And sure enough, 9 o'clock, I get a text. I just got him. I go down, I drive over the other side of the property, help him with the buck. And funny enough, it actually died in front of one of the other guys' trail cameras in the group. So we actually have the video of it. I'll have to try to find it and show it to you and send it to you. It's actually pretty unique. Helped him out, loaded him up. He left. So I'm out in Ohio by myself, which was fine. I told him go, you know, got to get open the shop up. I go back to my area and I'm sitting there and by myself. I'm like, man, because I've got a deep valley behind me. I'm like, if I shoot something down in there, like I've got a long night ahead of me. Sure enough, I'm watching like a corner of a field where these deer are coming up. If I hit you, just, nothing's coming. And I hear something behind me. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. Again, this is straight wall. So I've got a final rest tripod there with me. Sure enough, he's coming around behind me and he's going, dropping down into this bottom between this funnel between these two ponds behind me. And I just turn around had to reset everything up. I'm like moving all these weeds. I'm like, this, he's going to see me and he's going to go hauling. Sure enough, he went down to the bottom and he was, his vision was covered with a lot of bushes, got set up. He came up into my shooting lane, shot him. And it was the first time I've shot a deer with a 45-70. You can hear the bullet hit the ground behind it. The difference that it's nuts. But he ran about 20 yards and thank God there was like a group of saplings where he died at, and his rack got caught up in the saplings and it kept him from sliding down the hill. I know. So, and it was like, that was like 3/4 of the way up the hill. So I actually left them there when I processed them and everything. And then her dad's calling me, she's calling me, and she's like, do you need help? And I'm like, it's not that bad. I was like, there's no point in you driving an hour and a half out here to come help me. So I ended up getting it up on the hill. I was sore for about 2 days after that.
I heard about it.
Yeah. Call me old, why don't you? but it was great. I actually have him here. Scored 132. He wasn't too bad. But again, he was one that we were watching. Split brow here, which is a common gene on the property. And then their kickers off their bases are a common gene also. So I was happy with him. I've been like a stuck around like 125-inch, 128-inch range. So he was obviously my best buck kind of to date. So, yeah, 2024 was good. And obviously,
I was excited because we've been together for a little over 3 years and he has not gotten anything. Yeah. And I joked with him. I was like, I genuinely think I'm bad luck for you. Like, I haven't even gotten to experience the phone call of you telling me you got a deer and I get to come see it and all of that. So when he was out there, I'm like, I'm at Walmart. It's starting to get late. I'm like, God, I really was hoping he'd get something. I got the text I got him and I'm like, thank God. And then so I'm like, do you want me to come out? I'll come help you. And he's like, no, stay home. And I'm like, thank God. Like, the curse is over.
Yeah. I had a previous years. I had a couple of misses. I had a buck in Illinois last year, ducked my arrow, spooked him. So he was a little on alert. So fortunate enough, clean miss on him. So yeah, like she said, I've just been like your bad luck charm. You haven't killed a buck since we started dating.
Well, when you were saying about like that little hollow and down in Ohio, it's like, oh my gosh, I know what you're saying. Just because, I mean, growing up, I hunted mountain big woods my whole life with my dad, and I was fortunate enough that my dad would just drag the deer and I'd help gut and do all that type of stuff. But he'd be the mountain man that would be dragging two deer, his deer and my deer or whatever it would be. And, it was just like crazy to see that. And like now I'm like, okay, let's debone this sucker. Let's do this, whatever we can to get it. Cause so I'm not dragging. And I drug that Ohio one, and dude, he wasn't even anywhere near some of the deep stuff that you could get in on the property that I hunt. And I'm just thinking to myself, man, if I shoot a deer and he goes down there, oh my gosh. Like I'm just like thinking it, you know, I'm done dragging. I'm definitely a pack out for sure. Just because, even though, like I said, that little bit that I had to drag my Ohio buck, and dude, it wasn't even that steep. And when I finally got to the top, to the field, I was like, oh my gosh. And it got a little bit warm, and then I have to take him across the field. Dude, it was just miserable. I'm like, I'm done doing this. That was my, yeah. I'm done doing this type of stuff.
My dad likes to joke whenever I shot my first buck, it was a 5-point. I think it was my second year into hunting. He goes, oh yeah, we were dragging that deer, and as soon as I stopped, you stopped. I was like, yeah, because I wasn't doing anything.
Yeah. That's good. What about, tell me about the antelope stuff.
So in 2019, my dad and I for a few years before then, we were talking about going on a trip out west together. And a lot of the conversation that I had with people before then, they always recommended go for an antelope first, you know, kind of get that under your wing, get that experience in as your first, because it's an affordable hunt. It's a nice, easy hunt, rolling hills, you know, nothing go out west at 17,000 feet and kill yourself the first time and hate it. So, you know, which I took, you know, that advice seriously about. So we went to the outdoor show, the Great American Outdoor Show in Harrisburg, stopped at the NRA booth and asked him, kind of asked for like recommendations. And he recommended me to Mike Watkins at Trophies Plus Outfitters. And they're in Wyoming, and they're based in Alzada, Montana. So we went out there in 2020, My dad took his 1903 A4 Springfield World War II sniper rifle. He's like, I want to kill an antelope with this. And I was like, yeah, like, do it. You know, it's more than accurate. Him and I have shot it a lot of times before. It's a super accurate rifle. And then we were like, you have my rifle as a backup, you know, if something happens. So first day, I said, you're up. You're going until you get something. I'll go second. First, I want to say probably around 11 o'clock, around noon, he ended up getting his antelope. Took a few shots in it. They're tough animals. If your shot isn't like on the mark on those antelopes, for as small as they are, I'm going to give them credit for how tough they can be. So he had a few shots into his. It passed. Second day, we went out. We ended up spotting. This is my antelope here. I don't know if I can get him down or not. I probably could. Yeah. Yeah, he's got some cool character to him. You probably can't see it on the video. He's got a lot of scratches on the back here from ducking under barbed wire, all the barbed wire fences and everything. But so the second day we went out, we spotted him, I want to say around like 1-2 o'clock, pretty far away. So we had to hike. We parked the Suburban that we were kind of spotting out of, you know, on the roads and on the property. Had to hike down around, down through this ravine, and we came up into this dried up pond. And there was like a, there was a ridge kind of on the, right on the other side of this pond. And this antelope was with probably 10 or 12 does. He ended up, we got set up. And when we got set up, he ended up seeing another herd, which with what looks like miles away. He leaves and goes over to that herd. And I looked at the guide and I was like, what do we do? He goes, we're staying here. He'll be back. I was like, are you sure? I was like, you see all these girls over here? He goes, he'll be back. We laid on that little ridge for probably an hour and a half, just bullshitting with each other, you know, shooting the shit, having a good time. And he started coming back, and the guy was like, all right, let's get ready. He comes back with the herd, lays down. He comes straight, he's walking straight towards us, and then he lays right down. And we're laying there for another half hour. And I was like, are you kidding me? And then after that, stood up with that group. It was like 240 yards. I had my 6.5 Creedmoor with me. Sent a round through him. And again, I thought I missed him. And the guy said, no, you just wait. And about a couple seconds later, he did that, the prime, the antelope, couple steps back, head up over the tail and falls backwards. And then that was it after that. But they're fun to hunt. They really are fun to hunt, and they're so affordable too. And I just have to throw a recommendation out there for anybody that really wants to go on an antelope hunt is Trophies Plus Outfitters in Alzada, Montana. They're just very humble people to be around, and I've never ate so good in those 5 days of my life.
Well, what a cool moment to spend with your dad. I mean, that's mm-hmm. that's the one aspect that I wish, I hope I get a chance to do here within these next couple of years, is like plan something like that with my dad, just because we cherish our moments up at the mountain together, everything along those lines. But I've been saying, like, I put in for Kansas for him. I want to do something like with him doing like get a chance maybe at a nice real big whitetail, but even something like that, like you said, you're not killing yourself trying to hike all these miles, just because I know, you know, he's had two knee replacements and mm-hmm. all that type of stuff since then. And it's like, I don't want to put him through that type of stress. I just want him to enjoy a really cool hunt, and doing something like that out west would, I think, be a really cool thing. And you know, going chasing antelope, after seeing them the first time when I was in Utah and when I was with my my buddy Tim, ran across the road in front of us as we were driving. And I mean, I remember looking at that and being like, why, that one's like really big. And he was like, dude, that's a world-class antelope. Like just yeah. How thick, like just like he's been out west and he knew what he was talking about. And he's like, that dude, he goes, that sucker is really big. So like I saw that, I was like, man, that'd be really cool to hunt one day. So I hope I get a chance to do that. Maybe that could be the pushing mark, either to do something with some of my good friends or try to get my dad to do something cool and different. That's really cool though, that you had a chance to do that with him.
It's definitely a good friend hunt too, because you know, it's a lot of the property that we were fortunate to hunt on is private property, like that his guides owned, that's been in their family for years. So you're driving around on like a Suburban or a truck while they're pulling up on the hills and spotting. So, you know, if you're there with your buddies, you guys can just be joking around. Obviously, what you're still looking for antelope, but you know, there's times where, you know, it's really fun. It was a blast.
Megan, let me ask you this one. So, and Ken, you could even and chime in on this. You know, you were saying you're trying not to overstep your, go over Megan's toes about hunting here in Pennsylvania. What was your big takeaway from the whitetail season this past year? Like, what did you find challenging? What did you have to like maybe pull yourself back and like have an aha moment? Anything in particular that you could think of at the top of your head?
It is very humbling. You see social media doesn't help because you see everybody's like trophy pictures and I'm already in my mind, like thinking of my Instagram post, and man, it is so much harder than it looks. It was interesting just like the amount of growth that I had really quickly, because I was the one that we'd get set up in a spot early season and we'd go sit once or twice or even look at the trail cameras and like, this isn't where we need to be at. We need to move further down. Like I was, as much as like, he was letting me kind of direct it to allow me to learn. So we would talk about where we should go. And I would like, he knew the property way better than me. So he's like, all right, we'll move further down. We'll set up in this area. There was definitely, this was the first year we were saddle hunting. And there were some really sketchy setups that he was putting us in trees. And I'm like, are you trying to kill one of us? Like, what is going on here?
Technically, it was her first year in her life climbing trees, too.
So. Oh, yeah. I'm like, I'm not comfortable up on a ladder, let alone climbing a tree. And then he's having us, like, step from one tree to another tree. And I'm like, what is going on? But we would set up in another spot. And we finally, like, we're looking like 60 yards horizontal from us. Like, we're just watching them walk the same trail over and over. And he's like, they'll come this way. And after, like, I'm patient but impatient. And finally, I was like, no, we're moving over there. Like, that's where they are every single time. We're moving over there. And, of course, they just were never there when we were there either. I did force him to go to a college football game this year with me, and that was when they were there, is when we would have been there. We got the picture and he turned around and showed it to me while we were tailgating, and I'm like, I'm sorry.
I remember
seeing that game. You guys, what game did you guys go to, the Penn State game? What game was that?
The Penn State Ohio State game.
Okay.
So it was a must go game. When I was giving him dates, he was like, that's November. We're not going to a game in November. I was like, we are. You're going to pick a date and we're going to go to one of them. But, and it's just even like I've learned, like I've been telling him, like, oh no, that spot we're in is good, but it's an early season spot. Like the deer, like it's weird that it's just kind of coming. Like, obviously I didn't get anything. I'm no like huntsman here, but like learning very quickly how to like pattern the deer in our area. And we don't know where the heck they go in late season, but we know they're not there anymore. So it's just been really cool to like just pick up on things quickly and learn from him, because I do sometimes think that I know things, and then he's like, no, like you don't. Like, take a step back and listen to me for a second. But it's taught me a lot of patience. I have a lot of respect for people that are getting any deer, let alone multiple deer in a season. Turkey hunting was also frustrating. I for sure see pictures of kids getting turkeys, and I'm like, well, that's easy. I'm for sure going to get one. Definitely didn't get one either. So I'm even struggling shed hunting over here. So I just can't, nothing's working out for me, but it's been a ton of learning and growth. So I'm enjoying it.
No, yeah. That's awesome. Oh, Ken, for you, like, you know, what did you have to, cause I know, like you said, you don't want to, you know, overstep and, you know, all the those, you know, situations. What did you learn from like teaching her? Just because we, as hunters, and I think as, you know, whether you're male or female, you're always like, man, it would be cool to take someone out, but it's like, man, we're only given so many times to hunt and to do something like that. And like selfishly, you're like, oh, but that's my time. You know what I mean? And I would love to one day, I hope I could have a lot more time to take somebody out and show them the ropes a little bit of along those lines. So like, what did you learn in during this past season with helping Megan?
I think she actually taught me something and called me out on something. And I think I never realized how much I was probably on my phone in the stand. And she turned around and she's like, "Did you see it?" I was like, "Oh no." Like, I think I realized that I started to rely so much on my ears and my eyesight. And then I think that, and it's funny how it kind of comes full circle to where you're teaching someone for their first year. And then they in turn say, "Well, why are you on your phone? We're in the tree." And I was like, "Yeah." You know, I was like, "I'm not talking to you." You catch yourself, like she said, the social media stuff. You know, you catch yourself kind of just consuming some content. But I don't know. I think just teaching you so many things. And I mean, I'm proud of her of how much that she has soaked in kind of in her first year. I think you really got an aha whenever that deer, I think it was like the 1st of November when that group of doe came down off the hill towards mm-hmm. you. And I was like, get your bow. And she, so, but no, it was great. It's funny. I was just thinking about that when she was talking about, previously with you, like, holy crap. Like, I just realized that she's like almost fixed something in me that I probably have unknowingly taken a hold of, you know, these past couple seasons. It's crazy.
Yeah, no doubt. I've fallen victim to that. There's a funny story with that on some previous podcasts with me and my buddies where I've had a situation, my buddy had a situation. It was like all the same night. It was like, what the freak? Like, you would think one of us would learn from the other, basically. But it's true though. And I think I did a pretty good job this past year doing that, of just like, you know, putting that away and only checking it here and there or something along those lines. But, and you guys said this was your first year saddle hunting. How did that go?
It went really well. And then with her joking about me setting stands up and stuff, there was a couple areas. She kind of did like a little bit of a hybrid hunting. She was hunting out of a small lock-on, just because she liked to see the seat and turn around and sitting down for a little bit, kind of for the first half of the season. So that was where a little bit of the setup came into play with me. But having a saddle on and hanging a stand is just, and now I know that you have the linesman's rope on the loops and everything like that with, but it was so much more comfortable and how safe, more safe you feel kind of in a saddle, because you're almost kind of in like a little quote unquote hammock versus that harness that you have on setting up. But I've definitely felt safer in a saddle.
I'm glad you say that. I couldn't agree more with you in that situation.
Yeah. And I know that she agrees with that too, because I can turn around. I like a little bit of a bigger platform just because I have bigger feet. But I can still turn around and stand, because I stand 75% of the time anyways while I'm archery hunting. But it's amazing how much safer you feel, because you feel that little bit of tension on the tree the whole time. Whereas you're not worried about taking a little bit of a half step off of a platform. But I also like the hybrid hunting with a platform too sometimes, you know. So it's, the saddle hunting definitely brings a good alternative to maybe not doing lock-ons, but at the same time utilizing getting into like unique trees. Like when we went to Illinois, you know, there is lighter stands out there on the market that you can definitely use, that I do use, in the event that I really don't feel like using a saddle platform, but you can kind of use that hybrid approach. So I really love utilizing a saddle in as many ways as you can. And I know she enjoys the crap out of it. Yeah.
I mean, I've never been in like a regular harness, but I can't, like, again, I'm not a huge fan of heights. So like, it's nice to know that like I check my ropes nonstop, and I'm like tugging as hard as I can when I first get up there, and I'm like, okay, I don't think I'm going to go anywhere. I'm okay here. So I definitely, from a safety aspect, it's super nice. And we practice like crazy before the archery season started. He made me go down behind our house and pick out a tree and take the sticks in my stand up. And he made me practice all of that before we went down, which was really good. Mm-hmm. And reminding me like, you're going to be doing this in the dark or low light, so you need to practice now so that you can do it then. And I definitely need to get used to the dark. That's one thing I need to work on. I am like, as soon as it gets dark, I'm like, let's go, come on, like, we got to get out of here. He's like taking his time, and I'm like, we'll do that truck, we got to go.
Just leave your shit here, we'll come back.
I'll be coming down out of the tree, and I can feel this constant tension on my bow rope, and I'm like, what the heck is going on? She's like folding it up my bow rope as I'm coming down the tree to get out of the woods, out of the dark. Like, it's okay. Yeah, but it's moments like that, too, that makes it really fun. You know?
Yeah, heck yeah, man. That's awesome. It's always funny, though, because, like, me and my buddies, like, we'll joke, like, neither one of our wives hunt. And we're like, I wonder what that would be like. You know, would that be fun or would it be really friggin' annoying? Like, knowing that, like we just don't know. Like, that's our peace, you know, that's our time away. And we're like, I don't know what that would be like. Part of us, like, think it would be cool. Then the other part, we're like, I don't know. Like, this is our thing, you know? It's funny when you think about stuff like that. Well, let me ask you this. Just because now, like, you're continuously learning, you know, and even like Ken, you're continuously learning of how, like, what you need to kind of help her with. What's this spring, you know, summer? Do you guys have any idea of, like, hey, let's really focus on this. Let's work on this. Anything that you have on the docket for that?
I mean, we know that we're really happy with where my stand setup is. We left my stand where it was because we're happy with that for an early season spot. So we're not bopping around different spots. So we're happy with that for early season. We need to game plan late season, whether it's hunting somewhere else, just maybe the deer aren't there anymore.
I think too, is just a lot of practicing more shooting out of the saddles, I think.
Yeah, also that.
Is probably going to be a big spring chase for us. Just getting used to those different angles and different positions and stuff, because it is different than shooting out of a lock on. We're fortunate to have Chris is down at Creek. He sells saddles down there, and he actually has a little tree set up in the shop to where people can come in and try out the saddles. So we're kind of fortunate to have that to play around in kind of on bad days and stuff like that too. But I think that's a big spring thing is just practicing more out of the saddles.
Lots of 3D shoots too.
Yeah, more 3D shoots.
Love all the local sportsman clubs that do 3D shoots. So I've already been looking at what weekends we'll be going and spending either our Saturday or Sunday morning to do the 3D shoots. So that'll definitely get us honed in. So I will say I haven't picked my bow up as much as I would like to over the last couple of months, honestly. Mm-hmm. And anytime I have picked it up to like try to shoot a couple rounds before I start working at the shop, I'm like, oh boy, I need to get more consistent with this again.
Yeah.
So definitely hitting the 3D shoots just to get the reps in too. Mm-hmm.
I think too, going back to practicing more shots in the saddle, I mean, that's the one thing that I'm so passionate about, especially the education side of things with that, when it comes to saddle hunting and everything along those lines, just being an educator. And that's, you know, the one aspect that I just love about hunting. I definitely would say, you know, try to get as much practice in, and you only have to be one stick high, right? You don't have to try to be 5 feet, like, you know, 15 feet in the air and do all that. I mean, obviously you still can, but just to get as many more reps in as possible, I think, just be one stick high, set your platform up so it's an easy, just, you know, get down, up and down, up, from the tree. But with that, Megan, I think what a cool, maybe a little drill that you guys could do is like a situation of like, you know, you've had those moments of being in a tree now, like you said, you saw a deer and you were like just shaking. Like, how can you mimic that, right? Like, how can you, because I'm just sitting here thinking when you're telling your stories, and I'm like, oh man, I hope to God that first shot she has, she's successful, just because it's going to be, you know, awesome. Like, you don't want, like, you visualize everything, and I'm a big visualize individual, like visualizing what's going to happen and like where it's going to happen. And I always visualize like wrong things, like maybe having to hold a long time. So I'll do all those weird things in my mind, but like practice being in, you know, in a seated position and like being down and, you know, even like can have like a stopwatch and just be like, hey, clock's going, you have 15 seconds to get this shot off, be settled. Like, and you have to put on a good kill shot, just because like, but still being stealthy, right? Cause that's your one moment. And how do you make that work? How do you make it work where you're like, minimal movement, doing a reverse, you know, weak side shot and being able to pull that off, like just working on those little things, just because like Ken, like when you said earlier, you know, you went through a little period of not feeling the tag or something along those lines. I'm there with you, man. Like there was a time where, man, 3-4 years in a row, it's like, dude, if I would have, if my arrow would have hit the mark, I would have been 7-8 years in a row filling a buck tag in the state of Pennsylvania. But it was like stupid mistakes that, you know, the one year when I finally took time and worked on those situations, like what I just said, is when I was successful. And then I got lazy. I got complacent. And then I made stupid shots, stupid mistakes, and completely misses, or, you know, just didn't recover a deer or something along those lines. And, you know, I went back to basically ground zero. And again, it's like, I don't want that to happen. Like, I don't want any outside influences to cause me to not do that. So like, how can I practice? And I'm telling you, like, those little one stick high shot opportunities, doing those movements, I think they could really go a long way. And just like how Megan, just like how Ken had you practice going up and down, like with your saddle, and how it became probably really good and second nature for you getting up and down the tree, those shot moments and those opportunities, I think will being the athlete that you like, that you are, and that you were, like, as far as like competing in those competitions, when you were younger a little bit, I think that will just become like muscle memory to you, that when that heat of the moment, you're still going to be, that fever that we get and that rush that we get, but I think you'll be able to harness it a lot better than like someone new that's just going to go completely blank. And that's, you know, I think those training methods could potentially do you really good.
Yeah. Those are good ideas.
I love that. Cause that's been the thing that I've been trying to, I'll be up in the tree and I'm just visualizing everything and how am I going to handle it? And I react really well in stressful situations working in the veterinary field. I worked in emergency for a long time. I worked in surgery for a long time. So I know how to handle things flying at me and react very well to a stressful situation, but hunting's obviously different. So I've been trying to tell myself, like, in that moment, you'll be able to like control it and know what you need to do and get it done. But then in my mind, I'm like, I've never done this before. So am I going to be able to do that? So it's a lot of pep talking myself. And there's days that like, I'm like, oh God, if a deer really does come by, what am I going to do? Like, I actually have to do it this time. So it's been a lot of like, while he's over on his phone on the other side of the tree, I'm just sitting there freaking out in my head. Like, what's going to happen? I don't know. Yeah. So I love that idea of like him giving me a situation at a time and I need to react. Mm-hmm. So I love that.
And the other piece to that, like, man, I like just thinking about that, where when you do have that opportunity where you might mess up, again, going back to your old athletic career of that and like what you deal with for an everyday job, I feel like you're not going to allow it to beat you up, you know? And I think that's where I'm so freaking grateful about sports, right? Like, I've made the last out before. I've missed that game winning shot. I've had those opportunities where it's like, yeah, it sucks, but I know I'm going to be able to wake up and go through it and hopefully not do that again. And if it does, okay, I have another chance at it, hopefully another time. Yes, it sucks missing an animal, but you're going to improve upon this situation again. You've been there, done that. So like, that's the other aspect. Like, if you were just never had those opportunities in your life and you know, you're just coming at like all green, if you miss, you might be like, I'm done with this. I don't want to do it anymore. Right. Whereas like, I feel like how you're getting a chance to know you during this conversation, being the competitive nature that you have, the old athletic ability and that type of stuff, like where your mind frame is, I think even if something does go wrong, you're not like, it sucks in the moment and you know, it's okay to suck, in those, like that opportunity for that one half hour, 1 hour, but it's like, guess what? If it's early, you might have that opportunity and you're not going to let it go by again. And I think that's critical just because Ken, you've been there. I've been there. Your dad's been there, Megan, you know what I mean? Like, and we still love it. We still enjoy it. We're still going to work so hard at it. And that's where, that's what I'm excited to see, you know, coming next year after the end of the hunting season. I can't wait to hear your success, even through some failures, maybe. And that's going to be really cool to watch and learn, even as an individual outside of hunting. I think you're even going to grow even more from that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And he, I'm thankful to have him because he's kind of the positive one. If I do just in anything, like mess something up or don't do it to where I think I could do it at, I will overanalyze it for a little bit. It might keep me up a night or two. And then he's just like, it's life goes on. Like he's the one that's constantly puts me in check. And I'm like, all right, yeah, you're right. Or I might be like, yeah, but, and he's like, but nothing. Like, it's fine. I'm like, You're right. Okay. So I'm very thankful to have somebody that doesn't let me stay in my head and have my little pity party. He's just like, come on, get over yourself. So he's definitely my one to keep me in check.
Nice. Good job, Ken, man. That's awesome.
Thanks, buddy.
Dude, I'll tell you what, though. You're not the only one struggling trying to find some sheds. Now, granted, I've only gone out and retrieved some trail cameras and was looking like probably walked by 10 of them. Who friggin' knows?
Yeah.
But, man, I always say that's like an Easter egg. It's just for me. Anytime I've ever gone out looking for them, I've come out empty. And anytime that I've just gone out to scout, I've found them. So,
I don't know if it's a PA thing, but I just, you know, you see them, you know, I got buddies that go out to Iowa and then we've become close, just in communication with some people, in the industry too, that live in Iowa and Illinois and stuff like that. And they're just, you know, walking around with sheds and it's just like, what am I doing wrong?
I see some of them, they're like, we're up to like our goal's 100 or something. And I'm like, we found one last year. Yeah.
And they're great people. You know, it's great people. You may even know, do you know Tyler and Jenny Besser from Behind the Blinds? Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's who we've kind of been talking with more and more recently. And they're great people. And we met up with them at the Iowa Deer Classic and talked with them a little bit, but they really kill the game in shed hunting. I mean, they do a phenomenal job. And then we're up here in PA striking out, you know, my luck, I'll find a spike like that.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That was like a couple of years ago when I was turkey hunting nearby and I was walking through and I was like, all right, now it's deer scouting time. And I mean, it was even before noon. It was rainy. It was miserable out. And I was just like walking around. I was still calling and I just like looked down and like, oh, cool, little 2-point shed. I was like, there we go. There's my consolation prize. Lo and behold, as I was driving home, my wife's like, you still have time. Just go to a different spot. And I was like, it's rainy. I want coffee. So I did. And as I drove by, something caught my eye and I got out of the car and I started walking into the timber and called. The next thing you know, I had a bird right over me. And then it was a nice little cat mouse chase game with this flock for a couple hours. And it was like buzzer beater 11 something on opening day. And I ended up filling my tag and I was like, shit, my season's over now, 'cause I didn't get the bonus tag. but yeah, so it was a cool day. Left with a shed and then that turkey on PA public land. But, like you said, for all the years walking up and down the mountain, dude, it's you know the deer are around, but I just don't know where the hell they shed their antlers up there. It's crazy.
It's crazy how quickly the animals get to them, like the squirrels and porcupines. I'm sure up in your area, there's probably more of them, but they get to those sheds and they just eat them. It's amazing. Yeah, it's crazy.
Dude, guys, Megan, appreciate you guys coming on and talking. I feel like there's so much more that we could dive into.
Oh my God,
and
yeah.
About that, let's talk about where can people tune in, watch you, all that good fun stuff.
Yeah, it's Broken Knock Productions across the board. Instagram, YouTube, Spotify. Actually, I think Spotify is Broken Knock Podcast.
Mm-hmm.
We record them in videos on YouTube unless something happens or we have a snafu like we did on one episode, but that's all part of it, right? I know. But yeah, Broken Knock Productions just across the board.
On all this, even yep. TikTok for people that are into that, we have that too. So
yeah.
And across then, all the socials.
Yeah.
I made it just to make it to see like, there's some like younger kids that follow it that I'm like, all right, cool.
Yeah. And then with the Bow Shops Creek Archery. So you can find that on mostly a Facebook page. Chris runs that Facebook page pretty heavily. So
that's great.
Definitely check that out too.
Awesome. Well, guys, thank you so much. And can't wait to finally meet up and tune in more and watch what you guys are going to do and grow, not only, throughout the season and watch you that way, but also with the podcast and everything else, the video side of things that you guys are doing. So I'm telling you, thank you so much for coming on and introducing yourselves. And I'm looking forward to hopefully a couple more of these type of episodes where we could, you know, BS and have some fun of talking about some 3D course shoots that maybe we did together and some funny shots and how Megan whipped us on whatever course and, owned us just because she's not down in her own rabbit hole yet of all the nitty gritty archery stuff like you and I have, Ken, gone down.
Yeah. And Chris, unfortunately, Chris couldn't make it here, you know, tonight. He had the shop to run. So even if the four of us get together here, it'll be fun.
That'd be cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, yeah. somebody's got to hold down the fort. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's right. That's what Jim always says. Somebody has to keep Antler up afloat. I'm like, shut the frig up, man. But I appreciate it, guys.
To you too on the 5 year on. Oh, man. 5 years, man.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I really do appreciate that. It's crazy. I look at that. I'm like, man, I'm going to be 38 this June. I'm like, how much longer do I want to do it? You know what I mean? It's like, yeah. I still feel young, so I'm going to continue to ride with it until, no, man, I appreciate it. And then, we'll talk soon. See you next week, everybody. Antler up.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Antler Up podcast. We hope you enjoyed it. Please go check us out on our Instagram, YouTube, Facebook, and at antlerupoutdoors.com. If you enjoyed this episode, go leave a review and subscribe for next week's episode. Until then, Antler Up.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.